Welcome to the fourth episode of the Black Moon Podcast. I'm your host, Olka Balde, and I'm so honored that you're joining me today. It's been some months since the last episode, and to be honest, 2020 got a lot more in my face than I expected. I'm sure y'all can relate. And to be even more honest, I felt stuck. Black folks are being murdered faster than I can write these episodes, and it is consistently and constantly devastating. The episode you're going to hear today is about Malaysia Booker. And because the world doesn't love her sisters either, this episode also honors the lives of Nina Pop, Itali Marlowe, Michelle Tamika Simone, Dana Martin, Bailey Reeves, Rhea Milton, Dominique Remy Fells, and more that I will name at the end of the episode. The material covered in this podcast does speak on death and dying, specifically as it relates to Black people, trauma, and other subjects that may be hard to hear. This episode talks about the death of trans Black women. Whose names do we fail to see? Who do people riot for? Who's doing the killing? This podcast is aimed towards collective healing, so I won't say that it's not suitable for everyone. I believe we all deserve to be free and well. But I will ask that you exercise discretion, particularly for anyone who may not consent to hearing these materials, children included. Born January 14, 1997, Malaysia Booker was a 22-year-old woman with a big personality. Raised in Dallas, Texas, Malaysia was Black, trans, dynamic, dramatic, determined, and absolutely hilarious. She was the type of girl whose makeup always looked flawless, but was also comfortable, quote, looking a mess and kikiing on Facebook Live. Watching her videos today in 2020, I see a girl who was blazing, loud, 6'3", a stallion. A girl who liked to talk her shit, praise God, always had her wig laid, was the definition of booty poppin' and what waste. I laugh out loud audibly as I watch the recordings of her Facebook Lives. She's a raucous character. Talkative, manic, intense, and deeply human. Malaysia spends time on Facebook not just doing her makeup and making jokes, but also talking about her losses and lessons. She flaunts her unbothered flyness. She talks shit to people who hate her. She talks about sucking dick for money and how she doesn't care about the jealous girlfriends of the down-low closeted men who solicit her services. According to Malaysia, the money she gets is hush money because once they pay, it's hush, honey. Malaysia describes herself as a comedian. She calls in that she will be famous, and in one of the last videos on her Facebook, she emphatically reminds us that time is fleeting and there's no second chance on this life. In one post, she says, I've sucked dick in the dark, secluded spots. I've been parked with the AC on in the front seat, taking the shortest strokes. And I've been in luxury hotels, presidential suites, and of course, your successful auntie house. The one who think her shit don't stink, but I've been over there trying my best not to tear that plastic off her love seats while I'm riding her husband. I'm ready to tell my story. About being trans, she says, trans is a mental, physical, emotional process. Do you truthfully feel you're a woman? Not because you can afford a bunch of surgeries or because you're good with makeup and wear fancy hair. I need you to breathe, sweat, piss, eat shit this way. And for all the stank face haters, she gave this PSA. Public announcement. I'm not a dude, a boy, a man, a faggot, a drag queen, a punk, a sissy, him, shim, he, she. I'm not your brother, your son, grandson, great-grandson, or nephew. I am a transgender female. And if you have a problem with addressing me as such, I have no problem with cursing you the fuck out or punching you in your motherfucking face. And feel free to unfriend or block me if you disagree with my lifestyle. Rude bitches. Hashtag, that is all. On April 12th of 2019, Malaysia got into a car accident in the parking lot of an apartment complex in Dallas. According to the other driver, Malaysia tried to leave the scene and he stopped her. According to Malaysia, the driver pulled a gun on her and demanded that she pay him for the damage right then and there. In video footage of the incident that went viral, you can see that a crowd forms around the two damaged cars. The video doesn't start when the incident starts, so you can't see what's already been said or done. What you do see is an agitated Malaysia yelling at folks in the crowd. Police report that in one of the videos, an unidentified voice is heard offering someone $200 to beat Malaysia up. The next thing captured on video is a man named Edward Thomas putting what looks like boxing gloves on. He runs up and hits Malaysia from behind. She's in a pink wig, a blue crop top, and short black shorts. Malaysia falls to the ground and immediately puts her hands up, kicks her legs, trying to get Edward Thomas off of her. As he continues to punch her in the face, several other men run up and start to kick her. One man stomps on her face. Malaysia is beaten bloody and unconscious, while a few people in the crowd and the men beating her scream homophobic slurs. One person is heard shouting, quote, shoot that punk ass. After nearly a minute, a group of women intervene and drag Malaysia's limp body off screen. She survived the attack with a broken wrist, a concussion, several face fractures, and deep bruising. In news articles, family and friends would say that though this attack was captured on video, it was not the first time she had been assaulted. After the attack, friends, family, and allies held a rally in support of Malaysia. At the rally, Malaysia came out and spoke. She said, quote, this time I can stand before you, whereas in other scenarios, we're at a memorial. I'm overwhelmed by your presence, your donation, your support of my transgender family and allies who want to see justice served in this case. I will remain strong with your support. She also wrote on Facebook, quote, I love y'all so much. Thank you so much. It's a blessing being lucky enough to witness the love and respect I'm getting. And thank you all to my genuine friends that have been with me through this journey, knowing the real me, knowing nobody deserves that. I appreciate it so much. Just wait on it. Only one of the men seen beating Malaysia was arrested and charged with the crime. Edward Thomas, who was 6'7 and had 80 pounds on Malaysia, had hit her 26 times on video. For that, he was charged with felony aggravated assault. During his trial in October of 2019, Edward's defense attorney repeatedly misgendered and deadnamed Malaysia. He argued to the judge that he should be able to call Malaysia by her given name, Pierre, and that it would prejudice the jury against his client if Malaysia was presented as a female. While the judge ruled that the indictment could read Malaysia as her name, Edward's defense attorneys continued to characterize the attack as mutual combat between two men. They said that Malaysia had provoked Edward Thomas and downplayed her injuries as mere scratches. Prosecutors implored the jury to find Edward Thomas guilty of felony aggravated assault, but instead the jury convicted him on misdemeanor assault. He was sentenced to 300 days in jail, including time served, on the condition that he would not appeal the ruling. Malaysia's grandmother, Deborah, who saw the video, reportedly said that seeing her granddaughter being carried, quote, like a paper doll to safety, made her cry. Deborah said that Malaysia had told her, quote, Granny, I've never been mistreated that bad. Whether fortunate or not, Malaysia was not around to witness the trial or conviction of Edward Thomas. A month after that violent encounter, Malaysia would be dead, shot to death by a different black man, this one on a killing spree. On Saturday, May 18th, 2019, Malaysia Booker was seen for the last time getting into a light-colored Lincoln. The next time Malaysia would be seen was around 6:40 a.m. that Saturday morning. She was found face down in the street, dead from a gunshot wound. Police would ID her killer nearly a month later. On June 12, 2019, Dallas PD held a press conference where they announced that Kendra Lyles, a 33-year-old black man with no prior criminal record, was being charged for Malaysia's murder. Lyles had the same colored Lincoln Malaysia was last seen getting into, and phone records indicated that they had been in contact. Phone records also showed that Kendrell Lyles frequented the area where he had picked up and murdered Malaysia Booker. At the press conference, Dallas PD announced that Lyles was being charged with 3 counts of homicide for 2 other murders that he'd allegedly perpetrated after Malaysia's. Police also announced that they believed Malaysia's murder could be connected to 4 other unsolved murders of trans women in Dallas, as well as a vicious knife attack on an unnamed trans woman in April of that year. The other victims included Shade Schuler, who was found in July 2015, Armani Dante Morgan, who disappeared for a month in 2017 before her remains were found in a field, Brittany White, who was found in October 2018 shot to death in her car in the parking lot of a South Dallas apartment complex, and Chynell Lindsay, who'd been found in White Rock Lake just 2 weeks after Malaysia was killed. Police later announced the arrest of 22-year-old Ruben Alvarado for the murder of Chynell, but they have not made any more public announcements on if Kendra Lyles is still a suspect in the other cases. The month after Malaysia was murdered, 22-year-old trans black woman Tracy Single was killed in Houston. Her boyfriend was arrested in that murder. Then in September of 2019, Itali Marlowe was murdered in Houston. Her roommate, another black man, was charged in her death. In news reports, members of the trans community in Texas spoke out against the rising violence and murder of trans women. Some expressed fears that there could be a serial killer due to all the unsolved cases, and others expressed how the identity of many trans people are erased after death due to police misgendering and misnaming victims. At Malaysia's funeral, hundreds of mourners, including family, friends, and city leaders, showed up to honor her life. Her father, Pierre Booker, told News that all Malaysia wanted growing up was to be famous and, quote, it's sad that Malaysia had to become famous after death. At this point in the episode, I usually do a deeper dive into the worldly context of this black person's death, but I didn't want this just to be my personal rant about how I find it absurd that people are still so close-minded to believe that being trans is abnormal, especially in a global population of 8 billion people with clear documentation of trans people and trans cultures all throughout history. I didn't want to just go on about how, despite the rising violence, Texas lawmakers, and actually most Republican lawmakers, have blocked efforts to protect gender identity. They've blocked efforts to repeal the Texas Penal Code prohibition on, quote, homosexual conduct, despite the fact that it's unenforceable due to a Supreme Court ruling. Instead, conservatives are spending time advocating for bathroom bills, military bans of trans people, and caping for law enforcement who are often harassing and abusing trans people. I didn't just want to expand on how difficult it can be for trans people, especially Black trans people, simply to exist in the world. Didn't just want to talk about employment discrimination, familial abandonment, disproportionately high poverty and suicide rates, and transphobia, even in underprivileged communities. I didn't just want to stop at an analysis of how transphobia is rampant, even in movements that are supposedly for equality, like women's equality and the safety of Black lives. I also did not want, despite the clear need to point it out, to focus this part of the episode on the fact that in much of my research, the main killers and perpetrators of physical violence against Black trans women are Black cis men. Toxic Christianity, fragile masculinity, and deeply ingrained trans and homophobia must be addressed if all Black lives indeed matter. Instead, I wanted to highlight the voice of a Black trans woman who has personally inspired me with her work. Janelle Luster is an award-winning community organizer and transgender advocate and native of the San Francisco Bay Area. She serves as the program associate for the Compton's Transgender Cultural District, the very first legally recognized transgender district in the world. She serves as Bay Area president of Flux, a national transgender empowerment initiative through AIDS Healthcare Foundation. She co-directs an annual empowerment retreat called Transcend, and she was the 2019 Transgender March on Washington, D.C. ambassador. In Janelle's work, she strives for the advancement of transgender folks of color, specifically Black transgender women and men. Janelle grew up in Oakland, California, and for a long time she didn't have community. That is where her passion stems from. She believes that we must create spaces that are welcoming to transgender folks to come together and share space. I met Janelle last year when she and I both sat on a panel at the Nia Wilson Symposium. For those of you who don't know, Nia Wilson was a brilliant Black girl who was riding BART with her sisters Latifa and Tashia when they were attacked by a white supremacist named John Lee Cowell. Nia was killed and her sisters injured. If you've never heard of her, I encourage you to look up her story and look at all the beautiful art that's been made in her honor. Hello, Janelle.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I'm so excited to have you here and I'm so inspired by the work that you do.
Thank you for having me here as well. I know we've been trying to do this for a while now.
I'm really glad that it's finally happening. And here we are again, you know, speaking in defense of Black women, making sure to use our breath so that we're not forgotten. To start out, I just wanted to ask you how it feels to be in this moment, to be a Black woman, a Black trans woman who's witnessing the difference in support for Black trans people who are murdered in contrast to the huge outpouring of the real and performative support that cis Black people receive when they're unjustly murdered.
You know, it's a lot. It's really disheartening. So I guess I would say, like, for me, being a Black woman and a Black woman of trans experience, because I don't feel like Black cis people rally the same way for trans folks. You know, I sometimes feel erased or disposed or just unworthy of that same value. Tony McDade's life was a valued life. Tony McDade was a Black trans man in Tallahassee, Florida, was killed by a police officer as well. And we didn't see the same rallying for his life that we see for George Floyd's death. We had a protest here in Oakland just for that, because at the Black Lives Matter protest, we haven't seen his name chanted or signs. You see it here and there because we're there.
I'm so glad that you brought that up because, you know, we did talk about Tony Big Dade before this interview, and you rightfully pointed out a lot of the time the reaction to Black trans violence is to ask what that trans person did to deserve it or to automatically believe the story that the perpetrator is putting out about what happened. Mm-hmm. But when a Black cis person is killed, you know, most likely whatever the perpetrator or the police say, most Black people are going to side-eye that and think it's a lie. Can you speak a little bit more to that?
You know, we have the situation with George Floyd, and then we have the situation with Tony Big Dade. Both of these Black men were killed by the police. So George Floyd's death, I didn't initially know what he was arrested for. I didn't know what he was being detained for. I know that there's a video that came out, and there's this knee on his neck, this white cop. You hear George pleading and saying he can't breathe. Officer, like, you know, can you get up? And then you hear him cry out for his mom, and then you see the life leave his body. At no point did anyone question what he did. No one questioned why George was arrested or anything. But when Tony was killed, people were questioning, well, what did he do? And, oh, we heard that he was trying to attack some people earlier in the day. So maybe he got what was coming to him. It was like, so does that warrant the police killing him? My understanding is the police should arrest you and take you in, and you should be charged and booked, and you should go in front of a judge and a jury. But the police is taking that from Black people in general.
One of the things that you talked about, not just with Tony, but with the situation with Iyanna, was how Iyanna Dior was beaten up in a very similar situation to what happened to Malaysia Booker, right? Like,
yes.
There was a car accident, people surrounded her. One of the things that you had talked about was the fact that people knew her.
Yeah, so if you're listening to the video, so the video was really long. And so I was watching the video, you know, there's so many different clips, but when you actually get the whole video, it's like, what, 21 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. And you hear some of the men in the video saying, yeah, this is such and such, you know, that little fact that be with such and such. Yeah, she hit somebody's car. And so that for me said, hey, these people know her. This is her neighborhood, right? And so now, you know, after the fact, we got more information and we do know that they did, in fact, know her. Mm-hmm. But watching the video and she's running into the store trying to seek safety, and it's recorded. No one is really coming to their defense. People were like, oh, well, you know, the girls need to stop messing with these thug niggas and stay out of these neighborhoods. And it was like, how dare you say something like that? How dare you say that we should stay out of these areas that we grew up in? These are our neighborhoods. The same way all these other people grew up here, I grew up here too. And so for people to say that, and how can you tell me to stop messing with Black men? And I love Black men. I shouldn't have to not mess with a Black man because they don't value my life. All of them are not like that.
You were saying how you see in the video that the people who are beating Iyanna were people who knew her. And how transphobia in the Black community makes it harder for trans people to receive justice because Black cis people are showing up against them, against yes. Black trans people.
Definitely. Thank you. It does make it hard for trans people to seek justice when you have your own people going against you. And so if people are justifying that this girl was beat because there was a fender bender, but no one is like, oh, like, any insurance or the fact that you allowed this person to drive your car. Nothing warranted for this girl to be beaten like this. And even more for people to be just standing by, jumping in and recording it. No one calling the police or anything like that. It was really disheartening.
One thing that you had said that really struck me was, how come it's us out here fighting when it is your sons who are being killed, but when it's us being killed, that same energy isn't reciprocated?
Most of the time, it's Black queer folks who are organizing, who are on the front lines. It's trans people who are out there on the front lines. But those people don't come when we're killed. We're always met with questions and all of these other things on why it was justified.
that was one of the reasons why I really thought it was important to do this episode at this time, especially to embody and project that unapologeticness that was Malaysia, mm-hmm. because we are seeing mass proclamations right now that say Black Lives Matter, but it's really clear to me, and it sounds like to you too, that not all Black lives are being defended or rioted for or held as sacred on the same level. You know, right. I mean, I go into the shade room comments where I consider that, okay, this is what is mainstream Black culture. This is representing mainstream Black culture. And under the picture, every picture of Zaya Wade, I mean, the comments I see are honestly terrifying. Yeah. In those comments, you can see how terribly destructive of a force white supremacy and Puritan Christian values are. You know, and I was telling you before how it's my view, if we show up, protect, and defend the most marginalized people, then we're actually going to be able to defend everybody's rights.
Everybody.
Yeah, you'll hit everyone along the way to defending the most ignored. But if you decide that, oh, human rights stop here or stop at this group, then unfortunately, the effect of that evil is always going to come back to you. I mean, like, it's insane to me to hear white people defending the police saying like, oh, well, they kill white people too. It's like, one, why are you not more mad about that? And two, you know, when police were formed as slave patrols, the primary objective of that was not to kill white people. No. So if you start out with, oh yeah, it's fine to kill Black people, next thing you know, well, now it's fine to kill anyone who sympathizes with Black people. Mm-hmm. And then eventually anyone and everyone can be a target. So white supremacy is really a destructive force on all of us, including white people. And I think that's really showing up in the Black community and the transphobia the Black community is holding a lot of the times because of quote unquote Christian values that have been imposed on us.
Yeah. And so, you know, just hearing all that, the Zaya Wade. And so for me growing up, because I was raised Christian, really religious. And so I remember them always, you know, preaching those sermons of fire and brimstone and Sodom and Gomorrah and all of those things. And it was really geared towards, you know, the male child. And, you know, men are looked at as so strong and you're supposed to be so strong. And so even the fact that you may not even feel like a man and you're, for me, so I never felt like a boy child, right? Mm-hmm. And I always had this femme energy. I didn't know anything about being transgender. But growing up, it was just always so pressed, like, you're not supposed to be a girl. You're not supposed to be a girl. This is a phase you're going to get out of it. And it was, like, so transphobic, even to the fact that when I did transition, my family members, they're like, oh, like, you can dress how you want to dress, but I'm not going to call you Janelle.
Wow.
And it was like, oh, wow, like, it's really just so deep. And so you see all of these things with trans women being killed and Black folks thinking that it's okay. They think that we're out here tricking folks. And it's like, are we out here tricking folks? Really? Like, these men are sleeping with us willingly. They are reaching out to us. Like, I, on a daily basis, if I could just screenshot messages that Black men are sending that want to talk to me. And I'm like, wow, like, these Black men talk to us in secret. But when they're killed, we're out there in public rallying for their lives and they're not doing the same for us. And, you know, Ayana's situation definitely got a lot of coverage. It was really heartbreaking, though, because it was like, this happens to us every day.
Right.
It happens to us every day. And right now, being that we just learned of two more trans women being murdered, Raya Milton and Dominique Fales. And then just the details that came with Dominique's discovery of her being pulled out of a river in a suitcase and her body was mutilated was just crazy. It is just like the level of hate that comes. And then also it's just like, this is not even the hate that you even have. All of this hate is not even geared towards us. This hate is hate that you have for yourself too. And you're trying to silence us. I hate to bring this up, but like, so those two cases happened or came out and we were flooded. Our timelines were flooded with this information, right? I think, mm-hmm. I want to say like Thursday. And then there was a post by a trans leader. I'm not going to say their name. questioning why Black trans women were being killed. And in the post, it was saying, "We talking about Black trans women keep getting killed, which is correct, but is it because sex work, DL men, escorting, exposing and exploiting individuals, disrespecting marriages, playing victim, thinking y'all can't get jobs, not giving out y'all true self? Just some questions." And that was really disturbing for me. It really bothered me because it was like, here we are again justifying why we are being killed, and it's not justifiable.
Right.
And one of the lines when I said disrespecting marriages, I thought that that was preposterous, that we are looked at as we are disrespecting marriages, but these men are coming to us. Our loyalty is not to anyone's wives or their partners. And so just for that to be posed really bothered me. And it was coming from someone within our community. And so, you know, there was this post that was saying, like, who's going to ever rally for us? Who's going to rally for Black trans women? We rally for ourselves. Like, so we're always saying when someone dies, we make sure that we say their name and keep their memories alive. And we protest in the street and we put them up in our homes and stuff. But who is truly rallying for us? Especially if our own community is justifying this. This post came from a trans masculine person, a Black trans masculine person. And so it was like, are our trans brothers not even going to rally for us? Are they going to justify at every corner? So when you bring up escorting, and this is something that we use for survival, because trans people are not even allowed to or have access to these jobs. It's just really sad. It's really sad that folks are not seeing our lives as valuable. It's how it feels for me. It makes me feel like I'm not valued. Yes, I'm valued to the people who love me closely, but in a greater scheme of something, if I was killed tomorrow, like by a trade or something, like folks would not rally for me the same way. They would question the moment that they found out that I'm trans, because I'm sure I would be misgendered and all of those things first. But the moment that they found out who I am and how my life is lived, all of these questions would come up justifying why I was killed. And that is just heartbreaking.
This false narrative of, oh, people are being tricked, then they find out and then they fly into this murderous rage and that's what's happening. I mean,
and it's like, no, we're not tricking you. So I know that there has been, so my personal experiences, there have been guys that I have messed with and had messed with for years, right? Mm-hmm. And so then there had came a point when my self-worth was more to me. And it was, I'm not going to be in the closet. I shouldn't have to hide that I date you. You're hiding that. We are in love. You claim that you love me in private. I say I love you. And for me, if I love you, I want to shout it to the world. And so now that I'm going to take that direction, now you don't want that to happen because your credibility is going to be checked or crashed or taken away from you. And so now you're going to go into these measures of threatening me. I've had men threaten me like, oh, if you tell this person to that person, I'll kill you. I'll come find your family, all these things to try to keep me secret. And so for me, it was just best to be like, I don't want to deal with those type of men anymore.
It's so interesting that you bring that up. I actually, while you were talking, was thinking about the book Sisters of the Yam, where I'm trying to recall now who wrote it. I'm going to be so embarrassed later. But, you know, they're talking about how one facet of white supremacy that was introduced into Black culture was this system of lying, you know, where a white supremacy really depends on falsehoods and lies. And unfortunately, that became introduced to Black people and Black, you know, people who would later become Black Americans, because in slavery, on one hand, you teach your children that honesty is important and valuable and to be strived for. But on the other hand, your children are witnessing you often lie because you have to lie for survival. You have to lie to white people. And so, you know, one facet of white supremacy that they were unpacking was that Black people really need to reevaluate their relationship with honesty, to be honest with one another, to be honest with yourself. And what I'm hearing you talk about, both with Black cis men and Black cis women, is that there needs to be a level of honesty, because if there's honesty, then you won't have that deep self-loathing that will lead you to do something in secret, and then in public, you're going to completely deny that or actually react in a violent way. You know, yeah. Even Black cis women at this time, the mainstream right now, when I look at fashion, when I look at makeup, that all came from Black trans women. I'm like, yes. Those wigs, like the wigs, the beat, like the makeup, all of that is directly from Black trans women. So we can't strip that.
Right. And it's like, you know, we are hairstylists and nail techs and stylists and cooks and homemakers. We are mothers and all of that. And so it's just, sometimes it's just really sad, like from my personal experience, because my life is just full of Black people. Black cis women feel inferior to trans women. And they shouldn't. My existence does not threaten your existence. I just feel like if more Black women just really knew that, and didn't, you know, put out transphobia, I feel like it starts at home. So my family that I grew up in was mostly women. And it's always a joy to be around Black women and Black culture in general. And I feel like that's why people, you know, steal from us so much. But then when we are in our own community and we can't honor folks, like, don't only have me as your hairstylist and I'm the girl to go to for that. But then if your son was like, oh, she's fine, you'd be so quick to tell my tea or dish my tea or give, oh, that's a man. And it's like, so I feel like people rally for us for different things. But when it's really important to rally for us, they don't.
This Black cis woman is going to do her part as much as I can in elevating this reality, and just sharing voices like yours, I think is really important.
I would just like to share that when we are chanting for Black Lives Matter, that Black trans people are Black, and that you can't, you know, champion for Black Lives Matter and you're not including Black trans folks, that Black trans folks are just as a part of the movement as everyone else, if not more. Also, that I work at the Transgender District in San Francisco to check us out. And if you can support Black trans people with money, put your money where your mouth is, you can donate to that organization. And also TGIJP, which is also another Black trans-led organization. And be a better ally. Just, if you can, just be a better ally. Do research. And trans people are people. We are human, first and foremost. Before we are trans, before we are Black, before we are anything, we are human. When we were in the womb and folks didn't even know what sex we were going to be or what gender or anything, it was just so great to know that a baby was being born. And we're still those babies. Like, we're still those people. And just to value our lives the same way that you value your family's lives.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I will put the link in the show notes for the resources that Janelle just mentioned. Janelle, thank you so much again for coming on here. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I can't wait to get out to San Francisco and go to the Transgender District once Corona is over. Thank you. Before I close this episode, I just wanted to give a personal thank you to everyone who has shared, donated, and supported this podcast. As you might have seen me say on social media, for me, this work is not about constant content output or any capitalist ideal of productivity. Archiving, witnessing, and honoring the Black dead is sacred work that should be done with intention, and I fully intend to do this work at a pace that honors my capacity. That being said, I now have 4 episodes that are just as relevant today as when I created them. Please share these episodes, share the podcast, and consider making a donation at blackmoonpod.com. Support Black women, amplify our voices, defend us, and open your pockets. At this moment in our nation, Black people and our allies are pouring into the streets demanding the end of police brutality. If you're one of those people, I would like to leave you with these final thoughts, and at the end of this episode, ask you to join me in repeating some of the names of murdered Black trans women. These names include only the ones that I have read about and know of, so this list is not complete. If a particular name calls out to you, I encourage you to look them up, share their story, and share any action items family or friends may have out there for them. Recently, at a Dream Defenders Sunday School, which I'll link in the show notes, Dr. Angela Davis said, quote, "If we want an intersectional perspective, the trans community is showing us the way. The trans community has taught us to challenge that which is perceived to be normal. If we can challenge the gender binary, we can challenge prisons." And she is so right. Without trans people, without the legacy of Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, we would not have LGBTQ rights or consciousness as they exist today. We would not have the art, the expression, the freedom, the aesthetic, or the music that we have today. As we defend Black lives, it is our sacred duty to defend and fight for Black trans people. We must be the antidote to all that would see Black trans people targeted as they live and erased when they die. Something Malaysia said in one of her videos stuck with me. Quote, "Tell them if they know better, they do better." So do better. Listen to trans people. Love them. Defend them. Pay them. Call out transphobic content. And remember Malaysia Booker, who was described by friends as someone with, quote, "a heart of gold." She is loved, she's missed, she deserves to be remembered, and she deserves to still be here. Since her daughter's death, Malaysia's mom, Stephanie Houston, has launched the Malaysia Booker Foundation, a nonprofit that is dedicated to providing housing, advocacy, emotional support, counseling, employment resources, and training to transgender women. I'll leave that link in the show notes for resources or to donate to the foundation. As I wrapped up writing this episode, two more Black transgender women were murdered, Dominique Remy Fells and Rhea Milton. To make matters worse, in the wake of their murders, the occupant in the White House erased federal laws prohibiting gender discrimination in healthcare and finalized a rule that defines gender as a person's biological sex. For trans people, this puts necessary medical care in direct risk, including hormone therapy and gender-affirming surgeries. Without these treatments, which, by the way, are necessary medical interventions to address gender dysphoria, trans people are more at risk for depression and suicide. Please put the U.S. Capitol switchboard number in your phone. Call your representatives and demand that they protect the healthcare and safety of trans people. That number is 202-224-3121. I'll also leave it in the show notes. These calls are important. Please, finish this episode and call right away, today. I learned the following invocation and intention from grief worker Ekua Edisa, and I thank them. I call these names not to ask for assistance or to disturb their rest. I call these following names with the intention to offer our grief for their elevation. Artagas Madden, Claire Legato, Ashanti Carmen, Duana Johnson, Dana Martin, Jazeline Ware, Malaysia Booker, Michelle Tamika Simone, Paris Cameron, Chinal Lindsay, Chanel Skurlock, Zoe Spears, Brooklyn Lindsay, Denali Berries Stuckey, Kiki Fantroy, Pebbles LaDime Doe, Bailey Reeves, Itali Marlowe, Brianna B.B. Hill, Reese Walker, India Kager, Sasha Wall, Shantae Thompson, Maya Young, Naomi Hersey, Amia Tyree Berryman, Felicia Mitchell, Celine Walker, Nina Pop, Monica Diamond, Rhea Milton, Dominique Remy Fells. Thank you so much again for joining me. A quick note, as folks know, I like to reach out to the family for comment on the scripts before I put them out. I was not able to reach anyone in Malaysia's close circle of friends or family. So if anyone hears this who knows her and might want to make any comments or correction on this episode, I encourage you to reach out at my website. Thank you.
Love is miserable.